much for coming out this evening. This is a program that I ran for years in Toronto, and it's actually running there tonight. They're doing one there as well. And it's one that I enjoy as an opportunity to hear different thoughts that are Seder ready Divrei Torah that are presented in a capsule form, which people can use, you know, all of, part of, expand on, not expand on, at their own siddurim. So I'm going to give an idea first, and then Mrs. Menchel will speak second, and then Rabbi Schwab will speak, and then I'm going to talk about marking the war at our Seder. Each of these, hopefully, 10 minutes or less. So thank you also to Rabbi Schwab and to Mrs. Menchel for agreeing to present this evening. I don't know if you have the relative. Perhaps it's a parent, perhaps it's an aunt, an uncle, a grandparent, a sibling, who likes to drag out embarrassing stories about you at family gatherings, right? Do you remember when you got lost going to such and such? Or, you know, that kind of thing. I don't think I'm the only one. We do that at our Seder in the early part of Maggid. Maggid starts out by talking about leaving Mitzrayim. We get the story of the sages in Bnei Brak telling the story. We get the Arbabanim, the four kids, and how you're supposed to talk to them. And we get into the actual mitzvah of talking about leaving Egypt in earnest with the paragraph of Mitchila, in which we quote from the last chapter of the book of Yehoshua, as Yehoshua identifies the Jewish people as descendants of the idolatrous family of Terach. And halachically, this satisfies the Gemara's prescription, which I put on the sheet in source number one. I'm not going to be reading it out, but I wanted people to have the authentic original source, which says, Maschil b'gnosu misayim b'shevach. We start by describing our degradation, how low we were, our disgrace, and then we conclude with our high. So it's a debate between Rav and Shmuel about what exactly our gnos, what is our disgrace. Rav takes the position, it's talking about the fact that we descended from idolaters. Why do we tell this, do you remember when story? Why are we embarrassing everybody by saying, you know, you were idolaters at some point in your past? So standard answer is that it accentuates the high that comes with our growth. You appreciate where you are now when you see where you started, how things were so low. And that's certainly an approach. The Tosfos Rid, I brought it on the sheet from Rabbi Yeshaya of Trani, says something along the same lines. He says, we appreciate what Hashem did for us when we see, again, the trajectory and the distance we traveled from where we had been to where we are now. We appreciate what Hashem did. And then in the third source, I brought another idea. The Maharsha says, it's a good idea to recall where you were to keep you humble. We get very arrogant. Look at who we are. We're royalty. God took us out of Egypt. Yeah, but remember where you came from. Remember, you weren't always so hot. Wasn't always so great. All of these, of course, are important reads of why we start out by recalling our low point as a nation. But I want to suggest another idea. The study of history is the study of possibility and of potential, hence the title at the top of the sheet. Learning where we've been and how we've come to where we are today shows us our true potential, both positive and negative. What we're doing at the Seder when we say we were idolatrous, what we're doing at the Seder when we say we were slaves, is we are effectively unboiling the egg. For a very, very long time, until 2 years ago, it was thought that you can't unboil an egg. Once you've boiled an egg, that's it. It's in the boiled form and there's nothing you can do about it. Until scientists came along and said, no, you actually can unboil an egg. They came up with a way. In source number four, I gave you a link to an article on it. They figured out how to unboil an egg, how to unfold and refold the proteins. I'm going to pretend I know what that means. They're unfolding and refolding like a piece of paper. They found out a way to reduce the egg to the core components that it came from. That's what we're doing. We're unboiling the egg when we go back to who we were in the beginning. The study of history as the study of possibility is seen early in the book of Yehoshua. It happens in the fifth perek. Those of you who did the daily shiur with me, did Yehoshua, heard me talk about it then. This is right after the Jews have crossed the Yarden and entered into Israel. They perform a bris milah, which will enable them to bring the Korban Pesach. And after the bris milah, Hashem says to Yehoshua, I have now removed the shame of Egypt from upon you. And they bring the Korban Pesach, and they finish up the man and start eating from the produce of Israel. What does Hashem mean in saying, I have removed from you the shame of Egypt? So I brought you in source number 6 a few different ideas. One says this: we didn't look Egyptian now because bris milah wasn't an Egyptian thing. Ralbag gives another answer, that it separates us from Egyptian idolatry because now we could bring the Korban Pesach. There are multiple good ideas. But what I'm suggesting here is, and I'm going to give a summary so all of this will come together. But what I'm suggesting is that the Jews arrive in Israel and they perform a bris milah. Who was the first one to do bris milah? Avraham. When they perform bris milah, when they enter into Israel, they're saying, we're not a nation of slaves who came out of Egypt and came to a land we had never been before. We're descendants of Abraham and Sarah. They are reclaiming their identity. They're going back to their origin. When they come into Israel and they perform bris milah, they remove the shame of Egypt, lest anybody say, these are just Egyptian slaves. No, we're not Egyptian slaves. We're from here. We're local. We just got sidetracked for a few centuries, but we came back to our home. That's how Hashem removes the shame of Egypt with the bris milah. That's the positive study of history. Remember where you came from in a positive way. And at the other end of the book of Yehoshua, we get what we read in our Haggadah. We remember that we were idolaters. And Yehoshua says to the Jews, you're descendants of Terach. Terach was an idolater, and I gave you a table on the sheet to show you. It's not just that Terach was the father of Avraham. Terach is the father of all of us. There was a member of my Beit Midrash, Yaron Peretz, who pointed this out to me. It's wild when you think about it. Terach has a daughter, Milcah, who is the ancestress of Rivka, Leah, Rachel, and according to the Medrash, Bilhah and Zilpah, by her marriage to Nahor, who is also a descendant of Terach. Terach is also the grandfather of Yiscah, who is Sarah, who marries Avraham. So both Avraham and Sarah are descendants of Terach. Basically, everybody in our family line of the Avos and the Imahos, one way or another, is a product of Terach, is a product of that Avodah Zarah, that idolatry. He's the ancestor of all of us. And this is the flip side of the positive. Right? The positive was, we come from this land, we are locals, we have bris milah, demonstrates where we come from. But the negative is, we also are descendants of Terach, and we have as much potential to be Avraham and Sarah as we do to be Terach and Nahor and Lavan and Besuel. And all the decisions we made since that time of Terach, whether it's Avraham and Sarah following Hashem's instruction of Lech Lecha to come to Israel, or it's Rivka making sure that the bracha is going to go to Yaakov, or it's the sale of Yosef, or it's Nachshon ben Aminadav going into the sea to Moshe defending the Jews after the Egel, all of these decisions bring us to the day when we enter our land of Israel. But all of those decisions could also be reversed. You can unboil the egg to take us back to where we were in the beginning. And I think that's what we learn when we play this "Do you remember when?" thing at the Seder, when we say "Mitchila ovdei avodah zarah hayu avoseinu." Originally, our ancestors were idolatrous. It can be a negative. We were idolatrous. We could be idolatrous again. We could be heirs of Terach. We carry his genes. However, it's also a positive. Because all the decisions that we made since then, the acts of millions of human beings across the generations, brought us not more shame like Terach, but instead brought us the Shevach, brought us the positive. So we ask the question, why is it that we're recounting the shame? Why are we recounting the Gnus? Why are we recounting the idolatry? It teaches us what our potential is. Both of those are our potential. We could be in shame, and we could become great. It also teaches us, last sentence, it also teaches us to never abandon hope. We were slaves. We were idolaters. And we got rid of both identities. And in the future, no matter how deep our exile, no matter how bad things are, we have to always know we experienced Genus in the past, we were low in the past, but we climbed out. And we certainly will do so again. Thank you very much, and Eden, please.
Thank you, Rabbi Tolchina, Bishas HaRabbanim. I cut out so much, but I hope I get to say everything that I want to say. First thing I want to say is that I picked three commentaries, or three Talmidei Chachamim, who are very dear to my heart. The first one is Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, the Rav, who lived from 1903 through 1993. And he comments about a piece from the Haggadah, which is Mitzvah Aleinu L'saper, the Yetziat Mitzrayim, which is what the Seder is all about. And what does the Rav say? He says, the second sentence, a key directive in the Haggadah is the statement in every generation one is obligated to see himself as if he personally left Mitzrayim. How do we do that? How can we relive an event that happened 3,500 years ago? We sort of can do it because, in a way, we're reliving it this year. Through Tosha Baal Peh, a tradition that unites us with previous generations and enables us to experience events simultaneously with them. And he says something amazing. Recounting Yetzias Mitzrayim is not merely telling a story. The imperative of you shall tell your son has a deeper meaning. It means that a son should be the sefer upon which the father writes. The foremost task of a father and a mother is to be a sofer, to transform his children into a book upon which he writes indelibly, a book that will survive the children and be imparted to succeeding generations. That's how we're all here. Baruch Hashem. The appellation, the people of the book, for the longest time I used to think it's because we read a lot of books, so we have libraries, Limudei Kodesh, Limudei Chol. Rav Soloveitchik says it does not signify a nation that reads books. It is a nation whose very being is a book. The mitzvah of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim means inscribing one's entire religious consciousness upon the next generation until that generation is able to do the same thing with their own children. I have to tell you that I heard Rav Schechter, certainly an incredible Gadol Hador, who is incredibly humble, just like Rabbi Tolchina was talking about the importance of humility, and he said, I've done nothing. I've achieved nothing. I did not forsake the Masorah. I was able to pass on the Masorah to my kids. He said, that's what I've accomplished. What an accomplishment. What humility. Moving on, because there's no time. The end of Perek Bet, and also in the Haggadah, the end of Perek Bet and Sefer Shemot in the Haggadah, it says, Vayizaku, Vatal Shavatam Elokim and Avodah, Vishmashem et Nakatam Yizkar, Elokim et Bito et Avram et Yitzchak et Yaakov, and the beginning of Perek Gimel, Moshe Haya Ro'eh. What's the vav there for? Because there's a connection. So Bnei Yisrael screamed, their tefillot went up to Hashem from their work, Hashem heard their tefillot, their 10 different languages of tefillah, and Hashem remembered the brit that he made with Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and then all of a sudden it says in the next parak, and Moshe was a shepherd. So Zaznaim Latara, who is Rav Zalman Sarutzkin, was written by Rav Zalman Sarutzkin, the Lutzker Rav, who lived from 1881 through 1966, wrote about these passages, Moshe Haya Ro'eh, Vav Mosif Alinyan Rishon. This is all connected, because as soon as Hashem heard the tefillot, and we know in contemporary times how important tefillah is, we've always known, he immediately was preparing Moshe to take the role of being the leader of Am Yisrael, because Moshe was a shepherd and he was practicing on the sheep. Because Rav Sarutzkin says, Ki in a Kadosh Baruch Hu noteng dula l'adam ad shedo ko batzon. Just like a scientist checks out medical research and other research on animals. Similarly, Hashem tried out the research on, he knew that Moshe would succeed, but Moshe had to see that he was going to succeed. And Moshe had two jobs. One was to basically judge and punish the Mitzrayim for what they did to us, and the other one was to lead Bnei Israel. And where do we see this? In Brit Bin Haptarim, in the very famous quote that's in the Haggadah, at the very, very end of this passage, source number two, which is missing because it fell. It's there, but it's whatever. All the way at the end, it says, Yodoa teda ki ger yazaracha be'eretz olahem, v'abadun v'inu otam barba me'ot shana, v'achrechen yetzu b'chosh gadol. That you should know that there's going to be this nation that we're going to be serving, and Hashem will judge them. I'm going to judge them. And Moshe, you'll lead Bnei Israel out. And Machat Choshech will be happening as well, but I have nothing to say about it right now. So Hashem told Abraham in advance in the Brit Bin Haptarim, and it's in the Haggadah, about the two roles of Moshe. And Hashem told Moshe, L'cha v'eshlachach el paro, I'm sending you to Paro to judge him, v'hotzei et ami b'nei Yisrael mi'mitzrayim, and take b'nei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. Okay, I'm doing okay. Second page. This was also referenced at the very end of source number 7, Rabbi Torchiner's handout, Va'atem lo et Yitzchak, where Hashem says, I gave Abraham Yitzchak. And of course we know there are three partners to every single child, but Hashem really had a very, very heavy duty role in this. At the end of Sefer Bereishit, Perek Yud Aleph, it talks about how Sarah was an akara, ein lavlad. She had absolutely no means of being able to have a child. And then we have this strange pasuk about Yitzchak being born in Perakot Gimel, Pasuk Gimel of Sefer Bereishit. And this is a piece by Menachem Tzion, Rab Ben Tzion Zach, Menachem Ben Tzion Zach, 1896 through 1987, another contemporary commentary who is unreal and out of print. And he says the following about this pasuk. The pasuk is by Yikra Avraham Mechem Beno Hanolad Lo Asher Yoldah Lo Sarah Yitzchak. Avram called the name of his son, who was born to him, who Sarah gave birth to him, Yitzchak. A lot of extra words in a Sefer Torah, which doesn't even have extra letters, unless it has meaning. And then the name Yitzchak, is this because Sarah laughed? But that would be mocking. No. So Bereishit Rabbah says, Yitzchak signifies Yitzchak Chok Lo'olam, a law that we don't understand, a chok, went out forever. And then he explains, Hamila lo hamyuteret shenishnei pamayim v'hashem Yitzchak bo lavlit she'Avram chaza b'nei ruho ki beledak Yitzchak lo le'et zikunav asher yalda lo Sarah achrev lo ta haitala edna Yitzchak hok lo olam hok al tivim bilti muvam b'secha anishi she'yitmid lo olam, sorry for the long run-on sentence, l'netach b'zara zara shel Avram b'chol ador d'b'chol matavim. I'll stop there even though it's a comma. That basically, the low is there, and it's extra, twice. And the name Yitzchak comes to emphasize that Abraham saw through with his eyes of his spirit that with the birth of Yitzchak at the very young age of 100, and Sarah at the very young age of 90, when she had no physical ability to have a baby, they're both old, and then she became youthful again in Perek Yitzchak. This law that we can't begin to understand came out forever, which means it's a law that we're above nature, like we saw a few days ago, Baruch Hashem. And we can't understand it with human intellect that exists forever in the children of Abraham, in all generations, in all situations. Vim tavot kufa shel mashber, and if there's a time period that is challenging for us, Shebeine Hasecho Yirek Yisrael Sabah. And it looks like Bnei Yisrael are like, we're done, we're old, we're finished. Bala Mizukan, ancient. Banav Yatzuhu, the kids are gone. Be'enam, don't aren't around. Ve'en lo acharit, we have no hope for a future. As Yofia Pitom Hachok Ha'al Tivi, all of a sudden, this law above nature that doesn't make any sense will happen suddenly. And like it says in Hosea, Kina'a Yisrael Vahavehu, which basically means we get rejuvenated. We become youthful again. Achrei bloto hushuv mitadein. After we've aged, we become youthful again. Kochot nurim mitorim mitchadshim bo. These youthful abilities are aroused and renewed within us. V'dar chadash v'ranan kam liYisrael saba. And a new generation gets up for the old Am Yisrael. B'leidak Yitzchak yatzachok l'olam shezera Avraham ino kafuf l'chukei hateva. We are not subject to nature. We defy nature, thanks to the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a few beautiful pieces on this that I'm not going to go into because I'm probably over time. Just to sum up, Mesorah, Tefillah, and being so thankful that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does so much for us, like this week and forever, but we have to hold on to that Mesorah and hold on to the Tefillah to be able to have Hashem keep giving to us as well. Thank you very much.
Okay, hi everyone. I only made 30 sources. There are more than 30 people here. And what you'll see when you look at my sources is there are about 25 different Vartluch on the Haggadah, and we have 10 minutes, which means I have less than 30 seconds for each Vart, which would be a miracle. Like we were talking about miracles, it would be miraculous if I could do them all. What happens is the best drush that exists, the Torah is pretty good, Nach, the Gemara has beautiful drush, the Haggadah is a tremendous source of fantastic drush, and when you get started and you start looking page by page, you just can't stop yourself, and that's why I have 25 sources. But basically, I have a few themes that are repeated throughout the Haggadah, and if a person would attend our Seder, you're all invited to Orlando, those of you who want to come to our Seder this year, these are many of the themes that I speak about at my Seder, and they appear throughout the Haggadah. So we're going to go Vart, but theme as well. So one theme that, and this goes in order, many of them are in English, so if we don't cover them, you can read them inside and you'll see if you like them. One of the themes is, what's the purpose of a Seder? What are we trying to do? So the first Vart, source number one, comes from Beinish Ginsburg's Haggadah, and he quotes Rabbi Schechter. On Kiddush, we start with Kadesh. Kiddush, it's, we say, V'romamanu mikol lashon, that Hashem gave us a language that's above everyone else. And Rabbi Tortiner spoke about it on Friday night, how special our language is. What are we trying to say? That our language is different and more special and greater than other languages. So Rabbi Schechter over here in source number one, it's in the English, explains that one aspect of the Seder is that we're using a lot of words. And we're talking a lot, and it has to be a holy endeavor. That's what we're trying to do. That we use our speech in positive ways and not in negative ways. That we're trying to bring everyone at the Seder to speak. That everybody should be able to speak holy words, and to remind ourselves that there's a certain way that we speak. We don't speak lashon hara. We speak positive about people, and so on. So that's source number one, and that's a good beginning for a Seder, in the sense that that's one of the goals of a Seder, to speak in a holy way and not to veer off into things that, you know, you can have a little fun, of course, yeah, you should smile and make jokes, etc. But it's a holy endeavor, the Seder. So there are other places in the Haggadah where I mentioned that the purpose of the Seder, that you can find that type of theme in throughout the Haggadah. One of the examples is in Marah. So I quoted from the Nesivos, source number 17, where the Nesivos asked the question, Pesach Matzah Marah? But Marah should be first, because we were embittered before we had Geula. So the Nesivos, in his Haggadah, the Ma'aseh Nisan, very famous Haggadah, he writes, Why is Maror second? Because we don't want to stress that our geula, that our redemption, is just a redemption from being subservient to the Mitzrayim, to the Egyptians. We want to stress that the purpose of our geula, of redemption, is avdus v'Hashem. If you put Maror first, so then geula, Pesach and Matzah, is just about that we became free from slavery. Okay, that's an important theme of the Seder. But even more important is that the geula in itself, that we are ovdei Hashem, that we're serving Hashem, so we're stressing redemption without slavery. So this is another kind of theme of what you're trying to accomplish at a Seder, to strive for the greatest avodas Hashem. There's such a koach at a Seder. If you look in source number 2 in Urchatz, so Rav Twersky, the From Bondage Haggadah, something like that, Abraham Twersky, so he's explaining, why is it Kadesh Urchatz? Why isn't it Urchatz Kadesh? And basically what he says is that, because normally you want to clean yourself before you sanctify. You want to be Urchatz, you want to clean, right? Wash yourself before you get holy. So he says that over here we start with Kadesh and then we go to Urchatz. And the answer is, because on the Seder night we start with Kadesh, because there's a koach, there's a tremendous power in the air at every single Seder, and we can capture that. We can go in the opposite order. We can start with Kedusha. We don't have to clean ourselves first. We don't have to wash our hands. We can start with holiness. That's a unique experience. That doesn't exist at other times of the year. But on the Seder night, with everyone around you, whoever you have around you, all of us have that koach. And part of the goal of the Seder is to tap into that power. There's a Chassidus Shavart relating to this about the term Urchatz. Now, I translated Urchatz as washing, right? Washing before you have Charoset. But in the Chassidus Shavarim, they have a different part. There's Rachitz also means Urchatz. Rachitz also means something else. It means to have faith in Hashem. And there is a koach, there is a tremendous power in our starim to regain that energy, the faith in the Ribbono Shel'Olam, if throughout the year, we always have it. We always have Emunah. We always have Bitachon. But on the Seder night, we can tap into some incredible, powerful energy, and it comes from the word Rachitz, Be'i Ana Rachitz, in Hashem we trust, in God we trust, that's where it comes from, Be'i Ana Rachitz. So that's from the word Urchatz. Urchatz and Rachitz go together. And not only can we strengthen our faith in Hashem at our starim, but in the Lekach V'Halibov, he points out in source number 3, we can strengthen our faith in ourselves, at our faith in Hashem and faith in ourselves, that we have the koach. We have the power at our starim to do this. So one of the themes is, what are we trying to accomplish? That's one of the things that I speak about at our Seder. Another theme of the Seder, especially this year, it's got to be one of the major themes of the Seder, is Achdus. You know, why do the Jews go through all kinds of issues? A Shiloh, why? But we know why Mitzrayim occurred. Mitzrayim occurred because the brothers sold Yosef down to Mitzrayim. And we have to counteract that. If we want to leave Mitzrayim, leave whatever Mitzrayim, whatever straits we're in, we have to counteract the division of the brothers with Yosef. So where does that show up in our Haggadah? Many, many places. And I probably have 4 or 5 Achdus Vortlach here. I'll start with the first, Karpas. What is Karpas? Why is it the beginning of our Seder? And the answer says the Rabbeinu Manoach, very famous Rabbeinu Manoach, but it's quoted in English in source number 4 in the Rabbi Sachs Haggadah, one of the Gevaldike English Haggadahs that's out there. The Rabbeinu Manoach says that Karpas is a recollection of Yosef being sold to the brothers, right? They dipped his coat in blood, and we dip the Karpas in different minhagim about what to dip it in. We dip it in salt water, and it's a recollection of Yosef being sold. What does the Yosef story have to... Okay, dipping. Okay, there's a lot of things we dip. Why is that Yosef? So take a look in source number 4. There's a famous Rashi, an incredible Rashi. When Yaakov gives Yosef the Ketonas Pasim, Rashi says the Ketonas Pasim was a beautiful coat made of karpas, made of whatever karpas means, from the Megillas Esther. Rashi says that the coat, the ketonis pasim, Yosef, being sold because of the coat, is, take a look in source number 4, it's at the top of page 3, pasim lashon kli, milas kemo karpas utcheles. It comes from the lashon of karpas, the ketonis pasim, the coat of many colors, is karpas. That's a pretty good proof that karpas probably has something to do with Yosef being sold by the brothers. So achtus is another theme, and throughout these sources, there are quite a few achtus vortlach, like the Hisha Amda, beautiful Svas Emes. Shelo Echad Bilvad, Amar Aleinu L'chal Aseinu. The Svas Emes puts the comma a little bit different than everybody reads it, right? So it's not only one group of Gentiles who tried to destroy us throughout the years. That's the way we normally read. Shelo Echad Bilvad. It's not just one. So the Svas Emes says, no. It's Shelo Echad. Why Amar Aleinu L'chal Aseinu? Why is it that so many countries, so many peoples throughout our history have attacked Jewish people? It's Shelo Echad, because we aren't one, because we don't act unified. That's the way a chassid reads the Hisha Amda. That's source number 12 over there. And there are quite a few achdus vortlach as well. Okay, next theme of our Seder is a theme that's been already mentioned a few times, which is Hakaras HaTov, gratitude. There are many, many places where gratitude shows up in our starim. The theme is probably the primary theme of the Seder. I once gave a Shabbos HaGadol drasha that you may remember. I'm going to have to stop now. I once gave a Shabbos HaGadol drasha on why do we say, I'll end with this, Shabbos Anu achlim chametz u'matzah halayla hazeh matzah. On all other nights we eat chametz and matzah. Is that true? We don't eat matzah on all other nights. We eat chametz on all other nights. Tonight we eat matzah. So there's the Rishonim already say this. It's because on all other nights, when we bring a karban todah, when we bring a Thanksgiving offering, the normal Thanksgiving offering in the Torah is chametz u'matzah. It's 40 loaves. 30 loaves of bread and 10 matzahs. But on Pesach night, there's no loaves anymore. You can't have chametz. It's only matzah. And that's because the night of Pesach is a special karban todah. It's a unique karban todah. This is one of the major themes of the Seder. There are quite a few other themes. I just want to end 10 more seconds, which the one theme that's mentioned in my Seder over and over again, ad nauseum, only by me, but my kids know that to respond to any question that I ask with the following answer, which is, I say, why this, why that? And the children say, because Hashem loves us. That is a major, major other theme of the Seder. It's the primary theme at our Seder. So I say, well, if Hashem loves us, why was there Maror? And then we have a whole discussion about why there's Maror, and that leads to other themes, Galus and Geula, etc. But anyways, there's a lot of Vortlach over here. We did about 10. That's pretty good, okay? And come to Orlando, you'll hit another 15. All right.